Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Radio. I'm Tracy Coyle. I'm your host tonight. We'll be joined shortly by Bill, and we'll discuss a whole lot of things, thinking about the election just 1 week away from today. I hope you guys are all excited and ready and waiting to vote, or possibly you're one of those few people that have already voted. Early voting started in a lot of states. I know my parents got out and, you know, did their early voting earlier on this week. No, I think they did it Monday or Friday. Not certain which. We didn't talk about who they voted for, but I know who they voted for. No, I don't. I know who they didn't vote for. That's what I do know. Let's welcome in Bill. Good evening.
Hi. Hi, Tracy. How in the heck are you tonight?
I'd be fine.
Good.
I want to open up this evening by telling our few listeners that we lost somebody pretty important to the conservative movement this week.
Yeah, we did.
A gentleman by the name of Dean Barnett.
Yep.
Dean started a blog a long time ago called Sox Blog. And when I started blogging, when I heard about blogging and started to do a little bit of digging into what this thing was, one of the first blogs I stumbled upon was Dean's. And let me tell you, the man could write better than just about anybody I've read recently. And I thoroughly enjoyed reading him every day when he had his daily take on events. I was not the only one taken by Dean's quality of writing style. It was the quality of what he said, not just, you know, how he said it, that was amazing. He became a blogger on Hugh Hewitt's website, and that's when he got to some national attention. And then he joined the staff of the Weekly Standard, where he wrote articles in there. And I continued to read and enjoy his stuff, although it was considerably less frequent than what I would have preferred. For those that didn't know Dean, he had cystic fibrosis. It did not slow the man down at all. An avid Red Sox fan, an avid golfer, he was in all things avid. He died on Monday at 41 of cystic fibrosis, complications thereof.
Yep.
And it is a conservative voice that a lot of people will miss.
He was concise, cogent, and humorous. And he lived his life because he knew that he wasn't going to live as long as most of us did. So he lived his life every minute of every day. A truly incredible guy.
When I started blogging and I started sending him emails, he was very gracious with his time. Back in 05, 06, we probably emailed 20 or 30 times over the course of a couple of months. He was never anything but a wonderful person. I will sorely miss his writings.
As will I.
Based on the response that I have seen in the community over the last 24 hours, it's definitely a big loss for us. On a somewhat related theme, my nephew returned from Iraq last Wednesday.
Excellent.
Kind of surprised me. I was online early Thursday morning, and all of a sudden, Instant Messenger popped up, and I have his wife occasionally lets me know he is permanently stationed in Germany. That's where she is. So there was a pretty big hour difference in there.
Yep.
And I thought when the IAM came up that it was just Rosa coming on to say good morning, say hi. And then the webcam came up, and I went, oh, my God, you're back. It was very nice. Surprising. It was wonderful. I told him, I said, now that you're back in amongst the information living, that he is not to pay attention to anybody unless they are saying great things about what we're doing in Iraq. Because, frankly,
absolutely.
Because, frankly, we are doing great things in Iraq. They are doing great things in Iraq.
Yep.
They're doing it for the right reasons. They're doing it in the right way. I'm extremely proud of him and what he has done there. That's his second tour. He spent a good portion of his first term, first tour there in Fallujah and Mosul.
Wow.
He was very close to the cafeteria tent bombing back in December of 2005. He was just coming out of that tent when the bomber blew himself up.
Mm.
And he spent most of this last tour, almost a year, in Sadr City. So he's been in the middle. All
yes,
of his guys came back. All of them came back in one piece. He led a squad this time going back. He was one of the first Stryker drivers.
Oh, boy.
And when he came back after his first tour, that's what he was doing in Germany, was teaching people how to drive the Strykers. And he was part of the 2nd Cavalry Stryker Brigade in Baghdad, Sadr City area this time around. I'm very, very proud of him. He did a wonderful job. We talked only for about 10 minutes on Thursday, and then he said he wanted to give me a call and talk to me about what went on over there. He called on Saturday. We spent about 2.5 hours on the phone. I'm not going to go into big details of what he said. Let me suggest this. One, most people didn't know about anything that was going on over there.
Yep.
He did not see the press for the first 5 months that he was in Sadr City. He said he spent the first 4 months in pretty much non-stop combat.
Wow.
It was firefights every day. There was times when he went 18 or 20 hours. Most of the time they were 12 on, 12 off, and they did that for months. He said it got really bad before they started actually putting in air support to help. So he spent the first 4 months without much of that. He basically said that the Iraqi army is miles better, miles improved over his first tour. But he also said that he wouldn't trust an Iraqi policeman as far as he could throw them. And if you knew him, that's not far.
Yeah.
I'm 3 times the size of Chris. Although I probably wouldn't want to get into too much of a tussle with him at this point. I will suggest to you that he is disappointed with the mid-level brass. He said it is quite clear that it is safe enough now that the politically ambitious military brass has gotten a hold of virtually everything that's going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is if you've been in the military, you understand the issue with politics. Yes, the military is supposed to be apolitical, but if you have seen political infighting in a corporation, let me tell you, that's sandbox behavior compared to what goes on in military commands.
REMF was the term when I was in.
So he said that was the one big problem he had, and it's something that he is considering. It's a concern of his sufficient enough that he is concerned about whether he will re-enlist or not when he's up. And he's not due up for quite a while yet. But he's also not due to go back. He's done 2 years in there, and that was a little over two years, and that was more than they were expecting him to do. So he's done for a while. He's probably not going back there unless he decides to re-up, and then he'll probably go back to Afghanistan at this point.
Yep.
I'm glad he's home. He's getting a chance to spend some time with his daughter that he has spent a grand total before this of about 10 days.
Oh, boy.
So he's getting to spend time with his daughter. She's looking at this guy going, who the heck are you?
Exactly.
And so he's getting a chance to be a little bit, you know, get back with his family, and I'm very happy to see there. He's planning on hoping to be in the States for Christmas to see his father, my brother, and you know, if we get a chance, we'll hook up. But he does want to have more conversations, and I am going to suggest to you that if you are well informed about what's going on in Iraq, and realistically well informed, he did not say anything to me that contradicts what we generally know.
You know, and one of the really interesting things, there was a report out today that the Iraqis have hit 16 of the 18 benchmarks that are illustrious U.S. Congress has said, well, here is the metric for success. The Iraqi government has hit 16 of those 18. They have turned over a number of provinces to the Iraqi army and the Iraqi government so that the U.S. forces are basically support forces. They are not the leading edge. All of those say that we are very much on the cusp of a victory there. And isn't that a far cry from a year ago when the liberal press would have told you, oh gosh, we're losing and we need to bring our troops home now? And
I think it's rather interesting that the Iraqis have hit 16 of 18 benchmarks, but Nancy Pelosi hasn't been able to get two of her first 100-day things done in 2 years. Go, Nancy! Go!
There you go. Maybe we ought to pull out of Congress, huh?
That's exactly what I was going to say. We should pull out of Congress. You know, they
there
haven't met our benchmarks.
That's right.
You know, I will probably post something on our website as I spend some time thinking about what he has said and, you know, sharing what I can share about those things.
And speaking of our website, have you cross-marketed that?
No, I have not said a word about it. Nor have I suggested that if you're interested in joining us tonight, please feel free to call in at 646-652-2828, and we have chat enabled on Blog Talk Radio. And
oh, I forgot about that. Dang.
We also have chat enabled on our state Conservative Party websites and our national Conservative Party website on the AmericanConservativeParty.org website and on your own state. So if you live in New Hampshire, it's New Hampshire ConservativeParty.org. If it's New York, New York ConservativeParty.org. If you live in New Mexico, it is New Mexico ConservativeParty.org, and so on and so forth. And if you follow into the chat rooms at each of those states, you will actually join in the national chat. So it works out kind of nice. You can just log in from your own state site and join us in the national chat. So those are there, and if I'm not real verbose in the chat, and for those of you that know me well, I tend to be pretty verbose in the chat.
No.
Because I'm actually talking, and I'm not so good with walking and chewing gum anymore. So, you know, doing multiple things at one time is not so easily done anymore. Let's start off today there's two things. One, we have a new state that has been director of development in New Hampshire, and Jason Hale have come online, and we welcome them. We also have Ron Ellridge in Florida, and Charlie Domino in Texas, and that's added to our already existing South Carolina and Virginia and Louisiana. So I think we're up to eight at this point, eight or nine states that have got state directors of development. This is a good thing. I hope that if you are in those states and listening, you'll check in with those states, because those people are anxious to start getting things up and running and getting people signed up and being members. There is an issue that has been raised, and it's something that has that if you are at all politically inclined, if you are at all interested in getting your 15 seconds of fame, that you have to be concerned by over the last couple of weeks, especially the last couple of weeks, but over the last couple of months. If you are not part of the appropriate ruling party, it appears that you are likely to be scared off by the idea that just talking to a candidate is enough to prompt a review of criminal records, of child support records, of tax records, of getting your name and your address and your social security number and your phone number and your email address posted on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Joe the Plumber.
Joe the Plumber has gotten himself pretty seriously put into the ringer, and it's not just your average Joe that's facing this. Even members of the media are facing pretty intense scrutiny just for asking the wrong questions.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are not part of the party in favor, whether that be Republican or Democrat. And while most of what's been going on has been caused by the Democratic side, it should put a little bit of concern into you that there are people out there that if they dislike you, dislike what you stand for, dislike what you might want to support and join, you could become their target. And anybody with a reasonable sense of self-preservation is probably going to think twice about getting involved politically when the potential is you could just get hammered.
You know, Tracy, that's a really great observation. I mean, I have to tell you, I don't know of anybody that does not have skeletons in their closet. There is nobody alive today that doesn't have a skeleton someplace back whenever, whether they were a kid, a teenager, a young adult, an adult, whenever. They have skeletons in their closet. I know I do. And I believe that to be true of everybody living. And if that is the if that is the key, if you say, oh gosh, if you have a skeleton in your closet, you're obviously unworthy, then there is nobody, unless you are a part of the ruling clique, there is nobody that can successfully run for an office. And that disturbs me.
It should. I mean, you know, I posted something on my, I think on my blog earlier in the week, and I called it corrupt flesh. And
yeah.
What bothered me was this idea, and it was when Congressman Stevens from Alaska got convicted of
yep.
corruption.
Yep.
Republican Congressman Stevens, because you know we make the big argument that most people, most of the press will not notice if, in fact, it is a Democrat that's being hauled off in shackles.
We play a little game in my house. It's called Name the Party. And it's absolutely amazing to me. You can hear, oh, Congressman such and such was just indicted on something. Or you can hear, oh, Senator, Republican Senator such and such was just indicted on a charge. So it at least appears to be that if you are a Democrat, you are only a generic congressman or senator. However, if you are a Republican, that is prominently displayed in the indictment announcement in the press.
My observation was that based on what we were just talking about, this idea that if you even raise your eyebrows above, you know, the horizon,
yep,
you might get them snapped off. We don't allow anybody with a hint of corruption to be an elected official.
Yep.
But apparently, that's the only type of elected official that actually holds office.
Yeah. Very good.
So
yes.
If you have no hint of corruption when you get elected, and there is no way to be not corrupt once you're there, you know, I call the State Department, you know, alien headquarters. Because, you know,
yeah,
we send people in there and they come out, pod people.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
You know, what reasonably intelligent person goes into the State Department and still comes out reasonably intelligent? You know, it sounds like they're mindless, you know, drones when they come out of. And anyway, it kind of gets to this idea that if you have skeletons, whatever you do, don't, you know, raise your hand and get noticed. Because if you're raising your hand to get noticed in the wrong way, you know, conservative way,
mm-hmm,
maybe even Republican way, you
mm-hmm
know, you're going to get that hand chopped off.
Yep.
Now, I've got to suggest to you that right now the American Conservative Party is a little bit under most people's radar.
Yes.
And that's not without some effort on our part. We decided as an organization many, many months ago that we were not going to get too wrapped up in this election. We simply weren't going to be ready. And to try and force the issue would certainly create more problems than it would be worth for the long term.
Yes.
So we have, as an organization, been fairly low-key in this election. That was by design. It was, you know, be involved in your local candidates, promote them if you wished, get involved in their campaigns, you know, feel free to, you know, do whatever you want in there, but at the party organization, we were just going to work on building the foundation we need going forward. And, you know, that is what we are doing. But we plan on being more visible as the next election cycle comes in. But that gives us about 14, 16, maybe as much as 18 months to grow, get established, spread out over 50 states, and become a force to be reckoned with, all while pretty much under, you know, the hatchet man's radar, which is pretty much where I want to be at this point.
Yep.
We don't need to have, you know, lots of people, you know, trying to, you know, cause, you know, death by a thousand little cuts.
Well, and frankly, I have to tell you, the left is very much better at that than the right is. They have that art down to a science in saying, well, what about this? And what about that? and oh gosh, have you considered this, and oh my golly gee, look at what this person did 40 years ago. I'm sorry, we all have skeletons in our closet. I have mine. Everybody out there listening to us has theirs. We all know what they...
I want to suggest to you that by my absence in saying that I don't have skeletons in my closet, I'm not suggesting that I don't. Let me tell you,
I know.
There's a whole medical center in my closet.
Tracy, you do have a way with words here.
That's not an encouragement for people to start digging. I want you to understand something. You know, my front door is going to stay closed. Nobody's invited into that closet. But at the same token, the reality of the situation is, you know, I find it really difficult to understand the mentality of the people that want to kill the messenger.
Exactly.
You know, and my problem is, personally, my problem is, now obviously I've gotten over my problem with doing this by being part of this organization and being, you know, up here. I can suggest to you that I get a few emails every week that are impolite. Nothing, you know, drastically serious that I have to worry about, because frankly, I'm used to those type of things in general. So my association with the party has not drastically changed the tenor of some of those emails. Quantity maybe, but not necessarily the general tenure. But we as a group, people that are getting involved now, when we're still relatively small in a lot of places and growing, have to be worried that they're going to make themselves targets.
Yeah.
And I have to suggest to you that you have to take, I'm going to offer you my approach to this. The skeletons in my closet, my friends, my family, my partner, they know about them. It's not a big deal to them. It's not something that I, you know, worry about getting out there in public and such. But it's not something that somebody can say, oh, did you know about Tracy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people go, oh, yeah, we know all about Tracy. Thank you very much. Okay? It is that attitude that whatever is in my past is irrelevant to the message that I'm bringing to you today.
Yes.
And it doesn't change that message. And it shouldn't change that message. And, Bill, I don't know what skeletons you have, and frankly, I don't care.
Thank you.
And if those skeletons happen to be yanked out of your closet and thrown up in my face, I'm going to pretty much look at you and laugh and go, did you have fun?
and for the most
frankly,
part, I did.
You know, because I'm not too concerned by those things. And
yep.
We, as the people that are getting started in this organization, need to step up no matter what.
Yes.
And we, as a group, have to look at each other and go, we're not perfect, hello,
mm-hmm.
and we're not looking for perfection, because perfection is what somebody thinks they are when they're actually pretty much an empty suit.
Yeah, absolutely. I never strived for perfection, and the reason that I didn't is I don't believe in setting people up for failure. You can't say, oh my goodness, if you aren't perfect, you have absolutely no good ideas. You cannot say, oh my gosh, you aren't perfect, therefore you can't have any say in the public conversation. That is absolutely ludicrous.
It's BS.
Yeah, absolutely. And my response to people, those folks who find my skeletons, is to look them in the eye and say, yep, that's right, screw you. I can do that, folks, because this isn't public radio. This is Blog Talk Radio.
It's just my general approach to people, and I've tried to instill this into CJ as she has grown up, is, it's important to have a good reputation with people. A reputation
Absolutely.
Of being honest, of being respectful, of, taking in consideration other people. It is important to have that with other people.
Yes.
It is, however, not important what other people's opinion of you is.
That's true.
And she finds it hard to understand, well, you want people to respect you and to think well of you, but you don't care about their opinion? And the answer is correct. That's right. I want people to think well of me, but if they don't, I don't care.
Exactly.
And because I know let me
give you the one exception to that. If somebody doesn't respect me because I have done something dishonorable, then okay, that's a fair criticism. If I have been dishonorable, then you have a legitimate beef with me. If you are trying to manufacture that dishonor, then shame on you. Not me, shame on you. Because if I have not been dishonorable, if I have not been dishonest, if I have not upheld to the best of my ability my beliefs and my ideals, then you've got a beef. But if I have done that, there's no beef there. You cannot legitimately say, oh, you are a bad person.
No. You know what? I would suggest to you, because it's natural for me to argue the point, to disagree with you about that, but to say, I agree with you as far as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how far it goes. In my day-to-day life, my interaction with you involves the American Conservative Party and how we as an organization function.
Yes.
But you live in California,
mm-hmm.
I live in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
and we don't interact in our daily lives.
That's true.
And as such, whether you are dishonorable or not, whether you have skeletons in the closet or not, whether you are fun-loving to the extent that the police officer is going to scratch his head or not, is irrelevant. It is irrelevant to us as an organization. It is irrelevant to us as a message, in my opinion. I think it is, I can certainly call somebody when they say, I want to be for the middle class, and the last thing he wants is to be with the middle class.
Yeah.
And I can call that person, I could call him Barack Obama, but I could call that person, lots of different things, but I want to offer to you what I believe should be the proper approach. We as conservatives in this last week should take towards that person that wants to be president, Barack Obama. Over the last 18 months, this uneducated, inexperienced, naive gentleman, I am certain, has sought to be president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He has been called an empty suit. He has been called lots of other things. And I am going to catch hell for calling him uneducated. But he is, in fact, uneducated. I cannot imagine a person with a worldview such as he has, with an opinion and understanding of the economy that he lacks so much of, to be considered educated. It is clear, without any effort whatsoever, that he lacks even the most basic experience to be able to be considered President of the United States. He is, in fact, so naive that we as conservatives, we as people that consume politics, should have to look at him and give him any kind of respect. You know, it is said by many people in the political sphere, if you've been a politician for a long time, the last thing you want to do is to share a debate stage with an up-and-comer who has no credibility.
Right.
Because sharing that stage gives him or her credibility that he doesn't have or necessarily deserve. Now,
yep.
The Democrats have put Barack Obama on that stage and said, because he is on that stage, he has credibility. Well, I'd like to share with you right now a dear friend of mine's opinion about the idea that Barack Obama can be president of the United States.
Okay.
Data, what do you say? Barack Obama, president?
Data, why are you laughing? That was good, Tracy.
This is the point.
It was a wonderful feeling.
Here's the problem. You know, he don't know why he's laughing. And while I believe anybody that comes up to me for the next week who is seriously going to talk to me about Barack Obama as president, I am going to take Data's advice and I am going to laugh at that person until I can't hold it in any longer. Because
yep.
There's no way in the world I can take seriously somebody that takes Barack Obama seriously as President of the United States.
It would seem to me that it's difficult to look at Senator Obama, look at his record, whether as a community organizer, whether as a senator, whether as a candidate for the office of President of the United States of America, and to say, I believe this person to be a serious person. I'm sorry. That case hasn't been made to me. I don't believe that that case can be made. And I will join you in laughing at somebody that says, oh, this person ought to be the President of the United States of America. It just is not a credible position to take.
It isn't. And we, and I hold myself accountable for this, we as conservatives have given him credibility by debating the idea at all.
Exactly. I mean, I have had a number of conversations on chat lines and in person with people and that kind of things. And the thing that keeps coming back to me is that in one of his books, and he's got two out, no matter that he's only 40-some-odd years old, he's got two books out on his life. And in one of those books he says, and I am paraphrasing here, so don't anybody jump up and shout, oh, God, that isn't what he said. But he puts forth the concept that he is a blank piece of paper, and that when he says hope and change, that you are then able to project what it is that you hope and the change that you want to see onto his blank piece of paper. And then he claims that for his own, not because he espouses it, not because he believes in it, not because he will fight for it, but simply because if you espouse what your belief is and what your hope is and what your hope for whatever change it is that you're looking for is, and you project that onto him, you will support him. It isn't because he believes that and he hopes for that to be true and he hopes to be able to fight for that particular change. It's only because he wants you to believe that that is what he stands for. And in my opinion, humble though it may be, he stands for nothing. He stands for, what is it that you want me to be? And I will tell you that, oh, of course, that's what I want, until I throw you under the bus, along with Bill Ayers, along with Tony Rezko, along with Reverend Wright, along with my own grandmother, just so I can become President of the United States of America. I'm sorry, that is not the hope and change that I believe in, that I hope for, or that I will vote for.
Did I ever tell you who I voted for the very first time I voted for president?
I don't think I know that, no.
Okay, this is one of my skeletons in the closet. This is one of my utter shames.
Listen up, folks, here it comes.
I voted for Jimmy Carter.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And you are not going to repeat that mistake again, right?
Well, you know, here's my problem. You know,
yeah.
I was 18.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at Nixon and Agnew and Ford.
Yeah.
And that entire mess. And
yeah.
I looked at, you know, the gas, you know, the Arab oil embargo. And I went,
yeah.
You know, I don't know about this president guy, but let me tell you, if he's, you know, part of a particular party, I don't want to have anything much to do with it.
Right.
I was young and stupid and naive, and, you know, I was raised in Chicago, so of course I was a Democrat.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, Jimmy Carter became president for hope and change.
Yep.
And then a year and a half later, I went into the military.
Oh,
and
boy.
I started to become, what do they call that? Starts with an A. I started to become, oh, that's right, an adult. And I started actually paying attention to things. And in the military, we watched the hostages in Iran sitting, you know, in a little circle, and I'm thinking, like, hello?
Yep.
You know, go in, take care of this, you know. President
right.
of the most powerful country in the world, you know, you got, they're sitting on our soil holding
mm-hmm.
our people, you know, go in there, take that, get that done.
Here's your choice. You can have a glassed-over parking lot, or you can give us our people back.
Oh, I wasn't looking for glassed over. Oh, no. I was looking for fluids running bridle deep. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I became a Republican. Not
yeah.
because I believed the Republicans were right and the Democrats were wrong.
Right.
I became a Republican because I at that point understood the concept of consequences and responsibility and being an adult.
Yep.
And Jimmy Carter never learned that lesson.
No, he didn't. And then you progressed from Republican to conservative because you learned those lessons in more depth.
Exactly. Because it was this general idea that we are responsible for ourselves, that we've taken this personal responsibility, this individualism that is inherent in our natures.
Absolutely.
It is part of who and what we are as people
that
is recognized by our country, by our Constitution, by our Declaration, by our Founding Fathers, by our legacy, that we are in fact individuals that have responsibility, that should be held accountable for our actions, and we believe others should be that way also.
Absolutely.
And it
goes back even further than our Founding Fathers. I mean, when you go back and you read Burke, when you go back and you read all of the philosophical writers, you come to an understanding that says, you know, rights occur, they are there, and it is only government that takes them away from you. You and I have had this conversation in the past. Governments pass laws, but the only thing a law does is restrict your rights. That's all it does. Laws are not made to rectify a wrong. They're not made to make something happen easier. They are only to restrict the rights of people. Some of those we agree with. We say, we pass a law and we say, folks, I'm sorry, you can't go around and kill somebody just because you don't like them. We call it murder, and yes, we're going to prosecute you, and if we are successful, we're either going to kill you or we're going to put you away for life.
Well,
other laws we pass aren't really quite in that category. We pass laws that say, oh gosh, it's perfectly okay, take a current event, it's perfectly okay, it's not against the law, to hang in effigy Governor Sarah Palin. But if you did that same thing to Senator Obama, I'm sorry, that would be a hate crime, and we can prosecute you on that. I'm sorry, that's taking away a right. That's kind of my rant.
It's something that I've argued pretty extensively. You know, all laws are an infringement upon our rights. This idea that's been floating around in the last 24 hours that we need a new Bill of Rights, you know.
Oh, boy.
You know, people, government does not give you rights.
That's exactly right.
You know, if you believe that government gives you rights, then government may take those rights away from you.
Exactly.
And government doesn't have that power in this country today.
Yet.
It has the ability, it has the power to infringe. It has the power to deny. It has the power to limit. But it cannot take away.
Exactly.
Because it did not grant those rights. Those rights are inherent in us.
One of the most disturbing things that I've heard, I mean, put aside all of Senator Obama's lack of experience and all of the other things, it is absolutely chilling to me that in 2001, whenever it was, that he said that the Founding Fathers got it wrong, that they limited government, that we have to expand government so that things are fair. And I heard that. And then I coupled that with what he said to Joe the Plumber, which is, well, we want to make things fair. We want to redistribute your wealth. And I thought to myself, you have no concept of what our system of government and what our Constitution says. You may have been a constitutional lecturer. You may have taught people, but I shudder to think what it was that you taught them about constitutional law. Our Constitution was set up primarily to limit government, to say, here is how far you can go, and you can go no further, because we reserve these things to the states or the people. And he, and others that think like him, want to say, oh no, there's a second Bill of Rights, and that the Constitution needs to be interpreted or changed to say, these rights are rights that we grant you. And folks, I'm telling you right now, if it is something that somebody can grant you, they can take it away just as quickly as they gave it to you. That's the end of my rant on that.
Well, you know, I want to go back to this general idea,
yep,
of individual rights, and it's the key word that's important to me, and boy, I've used it a lot in many discussions, both on this, you know, on this show, on our website, and in conversations with other people. You know,
mm-hmm.
The word is individual.
Yes.
You know, this is a country.
The individual
made up
is
of,
sovereign.
This is a country of individuals. And
yeah.
It needs to, yes, this entire concept that the individual is sovereign, the individual is preeminent. The individual is the fundamental societal element. Without the individual, nothing else happens.
Yes.
Barack Obama does not understand. I don't think he even gets the general idea of individual. He sees mass. He sees the body politic. He sees.
You know, Tracy, what my fear is? My fear is that he may not see it, but my real fear is that he sees it and disagrees with it.
Oh, I think that's true. No, I believe that that's true. I believe he understands it and has rejected it.
Yep.
And I think that it is a fundamental precept. If you are going to promote the idea of socialism, and
mm-hmm.
despite all of his arguments to the contrary and Joe Biden's protestations to the contrary,
yeah,
it is a socialist point of view,
yes,
that the
is.
Government can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, that it should be allowed to do for us what we can't do for ourselves, that is a fundamental socialist point of view. It
yep.
is inherent that the individual is subservient to society, subservient to the government.
Yes.
And that is so detrimental to us as a species that we have killed millions and millions of people because countries believed that the individual was unimportant, that society was much more important, that the government, that country was more important than the individual. You know, countries have killed millions because they believed that.
Historically, his view of government versus the individual has never worked, ever. There is no historical referent to say, here is what I can point to that says this is a correct path to take. Now, the jury is out on China, because they still have a state supremacy. the jury was out on Russia, I'm sorry, the USSR, and they have resurged lately, but that is only because we are not standing up in the World Forum and saying, wait, stop, here is a better way, and then articulating that better way and saying, and we can prove that, look at our example. And we have not done that.
I just thought of something.
Yes.
Bear with me here for a second.
I'm here.
When the Queen of England talks about herself, what is the word she uses?
We.
What is the most common word out of Barack Obama's mouth?
I.
No, we.
Me. Oh, well, yeah, that too. Yeah, we can change this. Stand up with,
Stand up with me. With your help, we can change this.
Yep.
We all the way home.
Yeah, right? That's right. That's what the little piggy said.
All right, I think this is the point that I want to make.
Okay.
Barack Obama lacks the maturity to be an adult. An adult means that I'm responsible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm to be held accountable.
Yep.
I am going to act.
Yep.
I am an individual, and I will take care of me.
Yep.
I will take care of my family.
Yep.
We will take care of our neighbors.
And we do.
Without any effort on the state's part.
Exactly.
Barack Obama cannot. He needs the mommy figure. He needs the all-powerful mommy state to take care of the poor little children.
Yes.
Who cannot be adults.
That's right.
You know what? I'm tired of that particular idea. And I'm unwilling to let the children continue to pretend to be in charge. Time for the adults. You know,
yes.
Time for the individuals to stand up and say, hi, we're here, we've got it, thanks.
Yeah.
You know, and make the children go home and play in their little sandboxes.
Exactly.
And that's my particular point on Barack Obama. He's
yeah.
worse than an empty suit. He's not
yes, he
old
is.
Enough, not adult enough to occupy a suit. Continue
you
to
know,
roll up the sleeves. Don't worry about the tie. Make sure he
yeah.
has nice, clean pants and his pressed shirt and his shoes are polished, but he's not yet ready enough to play with the adults.
Exactly.
I
frankly am offended that anybody thinks that they are more capable of taking care of me than I am. That offends me. At some basic, visceral level, that offends me. I am an adult. I became an adult at about 17 and a half, because that's when I went into the service. And I saw what it took. And what the service took a kid, a young punk angry kid, and turned him into a man. Actually,
we have less than a minute
turned
left.
Him into an adult. And I said,
we have less than a minute left.
Okay, and I said, I'm an adult. I will take care of myself, folks. You need to look at what are your beliefs. You need to look at what is it that you stand for, and you need to check out our website, www.AmericanConservativeParty.org. I'm done.
Next week, instead of 9 o'clock Central Time, we're going to be on at 9:30 Central Time, so that we are on when the polls close in California. We'll be on for an hour. People, time to get out and vote.
Yep.
Bill,
call those swing
pleasure.
States.
We will
Mine
talk
too,
to you next
Tracy.
Week.
You betcha.
Good night, everyone.
Take care.
Have a good election.
Night.